This is cassette number 4.
The man's grin was what had Nicky's attention. A man like this only grinned when he had something he'd been seeking, something to bring him favor in the eyes of his superiors. And where has the man been?
To see his leader.
He waved the paper like a treasure map. Tired of the game, Nicky snatched the booty from his hand. She unfolded the wrinkled yellow paper and saw that it was indeed a map, with rivers, the coastline, and mountains all meticulously drawn out. Even mountain passes were noted. Nicky could tell that the map was authentic. When she had lived at the Palace of the Prophets, the New World was a far-off and mysterious place, rarely visited by anyone but a few sisters. Any sister who ventured there always kept exacting records that were added to maps at the palace. Along with many other esoteric items, all novices memorized those maps in the course of their studies, even though at the time she had never expected to travel to the New World. She was thoroughly familiar with the lay of the land there. Nicky scrutinized the paper in her hands, carefully surveying the geography, overlaying everything on it that was new onto the memorized map in her mind. The soldier pointed a thick finger at a single bloody fingerprint on the map. That there is where Lord Rahl himself is hiding, on that dot, in those mountains. Nicky's breath paused. She stared at the paper, burning the line of every stream and river, every mountain, every road, trail, and mountain pass, every village, town, and city into her memory. What did this man confess before he died?
She looked up.
His Excellency is waiting for my report. I was just on my way to see him. She snapped her fingers impatiently. Let's have it all.
The man scratched his beard. His fingernails were crusted with dried blood.
You'll tell him, won't you? You'll tell His Excellency that Sergeant Wetzel was the one who got the information out of the messenger?
Of course, Nicky assured him. You will receive full credit. I have no need of such recognition.
She tapped the gold ring through her lower lip.
The Emperor is always, every moment of every day, in my mind. He no doubt this very moment sees through my eyes that you, not I, are the one who succeeded in getting the information. Now, what did this man confess?
Sergeant Wetzel scratched his beard again, apparently trying to decide if he could trust her to credit him, or if he should be sure and take the information to Jagang. There was little trust among those in the Imperial Order, and good reason to distrust everyone. As he scratched his beard, flakes of dried blood stuck in its curly hair. Nicky stared into his red-rimmed eyes. He smelled of liquor.
If you don't report everything to me, Sergeant Wetzel, and I mean right now, I will have you up on that table next, and I will have your report between your screams, and when I'm done with you, they will throw you in the wagon with the rest of the corpses.
He dipped his head twice in surrender.
Of course, I only wanted to be sure His Excellency knew of my success.
When Nicky nodded, he went on.
He was just a messenger. We had a small unit of 6 men doing deep scouting patrol. They went on a circle far to the north around any enemy forces. They had one of the gifted women with them to help them remain at a good distance so they wouldn't be detected. They were somewhere northwest of the enemy force when by chance they came across this man. They brought him back for me to question. I discovered he was one of a number of regular messengers sent back and forth to report to Lord Rahl.
Nicky waggled a finger at the paper.
But this, down here, looks like the enemy force. Are you saying, Rich, Lord Rahl isn't with his men? With his army?
That's right.
The messenger didn't know why. His only duty was to carry troop positions and regular news of their condition to his master. He tapped the map in her hand.
But right here is where Lord Rahl is hiding along with his wife.
Nicky looked up, her mouth falling open.
Wife?
Sergeant Wetzel nodded.
The man said Lord Rahl married some woman known as the Mother Confessor. She's hurt, and they're hiding way up there. In those mountains.
Nicky remembered Richard's feelings for her, and her name, Kaelin. Richard being married put everything in a new light. It had the potential to disrupt Nicky's plans, or anything else, Sergeant?
The man said Lord Rao and his wife have one of them women, them moored Sith, guarding them.
Why are they up there? Why aren't Lord Rao and the Mother Confessor with their army? Or back in Adendril? Or in Dahara, for that matter?
He shook his head. This messenger was just a low-ranking soldier who knew how to ride fast and read the lay of the land. That's all he knew. They're up there, and they're all alone.
Nicky was puzzled by such a development. Anything else? Anything at all?
He shook his head.
She laid her hand on the man's back between his shoulder blades. Thank you, Sergeant Wetzel. You have been more help than you will ever know. As he grinned, Nicky released a flow of power that shot up through his spine and instantly incinerated his brain inside his skull. He dropped with a crash to the hard ground, the air fleeing his lungs in a grunt. Nicky held up the map she had committed to memory and, with her gift, set it aflame. The paper crackled and blackened as the fire advanced across the rivers and cities and mountains, all carefully drawn out on it, until the hot glow surrounded the bloody fingerprint over a dot in the mountains. She let the paper rise from her fingers as it was consumed in a final puff of smoke. Ash, like black snow, drifted down onto the body at her feet. Outside the tent where the moored Sith was held, Nicky cast a wary gaze across the surrounding camp to see if anyone was watching. No one was paying any attention to the business of the torture tents. She slipped in through the opening. Nicky winced at the sight of the woman laid out on the wooden table. She finally made herself draw a breath. A soldier, his hands red from his work, scowled at Nicky. She didn't wait for him to object, but simply commanded, "Report."
"Not a word from her," he growled.
Nicky nodded and placed her hand on the soldier's broad back. Wary of her hand, he began to step away from it, but he was too late. The man fell dead before he knew he was in trouble. Had she the time, she would have made him suffer first. Nicky made herself step up to the table and look down into the blue eyes. The woman's head trembled slightly.
"Used your power to hurt me, witch."
A small smile touched Nicky's lips. "To the bitter end you would fight, wouldn't you?"
"Use your magic, witch."
"I think not. You see, I know a bit about you women." Defiance blazed up from the blue eyes.
"You know nothing."
"Oh, but I do. Richard told me. You would know him as your Lord Rao, but he was for a time my student. I know that women like you have the ability to capture the power of the gifted. If that power is used against you, then you can turn it against us. So, you see, I know better than to use my power on you."
The woman looked away.
"Then torture me if that is what you came to do. You will learn nothing."
"I am not here to torture you," Nicky assured her.
"Then what do you want?"
"Let me introduce myself," Nicky said. "I am Death's mistress." The woman's blue eyes turned back, betraying for the first time a glint of hope.
"Good. Tell me."
"I need you to tell me some things."
"I'll not tell you anything."
It was a struggle for her to speak.
"Not anything. Kill me."
Nicky picked up a bloody blade from the table and held it before the blue eyes.
"I think you will."
The woman smiled.
"Go ahead. It will only hasten my death. I know how much a person can take. I'm not far from the spirit world. But no matter what you do, I'll not talk before I die."
"You misunderstand. I do not wish you to betray your Lord Rao. Didn't you hear your questioner hit the ground? If you turn your head a little more, perhaps you can see that the man who did this to you is now dead. I don't wish you to tell me any secrets." The woman glanced as best she could toward the body on the ground. Her brow twitched.
"What do you mean?"
Nicky noticed that she didn't ask to be freed. She knew she was well past the point of hope to live. The only thing she could hope for now was for Nicky to end her agony. "Richard was my student. He told me that he was once a captive of the Moored Sith. Now that's not a secret, is it?"
"No."
That's what I want to know about. What is your name?
The woman turned her face away.
Nikki put a finger to the woman's chin and turned her head back.
I have an offer to make you. I won't ask you anything secret that you aren't supposed to tell. I'll not ask you to betray your Lord Rahl. I wouldn't want you to. Those are not the things that are of interest to me. If you cooperate,
Nikki held up the blade again for the woman to see,
I will end it quickly for you. I promise. No more torture. No more pain. Just the final embrace of death.
The woman's lips began trembling.
Please,
she whispered, the hope returning to her eyes.
Please, kill me.
What is your name?
Nikki asked. Nikki, for the most part, was numb to sights of torture, but this she found disturbing. She avoided looking away from the woman's face down at the naked body so as not to have to consider what had been done to her. Nikki could not imagine how this woman could keep from screaming or even how she was able to speak.
Hania.
The woman's hands and ankles were shackled to the table, so she was unable to move much other than her head. She stared up into Nikki's eyes.
Will you kill me, please?
I will, Hania, I promise, quickly and efficiently, if you tell me what I want to know.
I can't tell you anything.
In despair, Hania seemed to sag against the table, knowing her ordeal was to go on.
I won't. I only want to know about when Richard was a captive. Did you know he was once a captive of the Mord Sith?
Of course.
I want to know about it.
Why?
Because I want to understand him.
Anya's head rocked side to side. She actually smiled.
None of us understand Lord Rahl. He was tortured, but he never took revenge. We don't understand him.
I don't either, but I hope to. My name is Nikki. I want you to know that. I'm Nikki, and I'm going to deliver you from this, Hania. Tell me about it, please. I need to know. Do you know the woman who captured him? Her name?
The woman considered for a moment before she spoke, as if testing in her own mind whether or not the information was in any way secret, or could in any way harm him.
Denna,
Anya whispered at last.
Denna. Richard killed her in order to escape. He already told me that much. Did you know Denna before she died?
Yes.
I'm not asking anything of secret military importance, am I?
Anya hesitated. She finally shook her head.
So, you knew Denna, and did you know Richard at the time, when he was there, and she had him? Did you know he was her captive?
We all knew.
Why is that?
Lord Rahl. The Lord Rahl at the time.
Richard's father.
Yes. He wanted Denna to be the one to train Richard, to prepare him to answer without hesitation whatever questions Darkin Rahl asked him. She was the best at what we do.
Good. Now, tell me everything about it, everything you know.
Hania drew a shaky breath. It took a moment before she spoke again.
I won't betray him. I am experienced at what is being done to me. You cannot trick me. I will not betray Lord Rahl just to spare myself this. I have not endured this much to betray him now.
I promise not to ask anything about the present, about the war, anything that would betray him to Jagang.
If I tell you only about when Denna had him, and not about now, about the war, or where he is, or anything else, do you give me your word that you will end it for me, that you will kill me?
I give you my word, Hania. I wouldn't ask you to betray your Lord Rahl. I know him, and have too much respect for him to ask that of you. All I wish is to understand him for personal reasons. I was his teacher last winter, instructing him in the use of his gift. I want to understand him better. I need to understand him. I believe I can help him if I do.
And then you will help me?
There was a shimmer of hope along with the tears.
You will kill me, then?
This woman could aspire to nothing more now. It was all that was left to her in this life, a quick death to finally end the pain.
Just as soon as you have finished telling me all about it, I will end your suffering, Hanya.
Do you swear it by your hope to an eternity in the underworld in the warmth of the Creator's light?
Nikki felt a sharp shiver of pain well up from her very soul. She had started out near to 170 years before, wanting nothing but to help, and yet she could not escape the fate of her evil nature. She was death's mistress. She was a fallen woman. She ran the side of a finger down Hanya's soft cheek. The two women shared a long and intimate look.
"I promise," Nikki whispered. "Quick and efficient. It will be the end of your pain."
Tears overflowing her eyes, Hanya gave a little nod. Chapter 13. The estate was a grand place, she supposed. Nikki had seen grandeur such as this before. She had also seen much greater majesty, to be sure. She had lived among such splendor for nearly 1¾ centuries. Among the imposing columns and arches of immaculate rooms, the intricately carved stone vines and buttery smooth wood paneling, the feather beds and silk coverlets, the exquisite carpets and rich draperies, the silver and gold ornamentation, and the bright sparkle of windows made of colored glass composed into epic scenes. The sisters there offered Nikki bright-eyed smiles and clever conversation. The extravagance meant no more to her than the rubble of the streets, the cold, wet blankets laid on rough ground, the beds made in the slime among greasy runnels in the muck of narrow alleys, with nothing but the bitter sky overhead. The huddled people there never offered a smile, but gaped up at her with hollow eyes, like so many pigeons cooing for alms. Some of her life was spent among splendor, some among garbage. Some people were fated to spend their lives in one place, some in the other, she in both. Nikki reached for the silver handle on one of the ornate double doors flanked by two husky soldiers who had probably been raised in a sty with the hogs, and saw that her hand was covered in blood. She turned and casually wiped the hand on the filthy, blood-stained fleece vest worn by one of the men. The biceps of his folded arms were nearly as thick as her waist. Although he scowled as she cleaned her hand on him, he made no move to stop her. After all, it wasn't as if she were defiling him. Hanya had kept her part of the bargain. Nikki rarely resorted to using a weapon. She usually used her gift. But of course, in this case, that could have been a mistake. When she had held the knife over her throat, Hanya had whispered her thanks for what Nikki was about to do. It was the first time anyone had ever thanked Nikki before she had killed them. Few people ever thanked Nikki for the help she provided. She was able, they were not. It was her duty to serve their needs. When she had finished cleaning her hand on the mute guard, she flashed an empty smile at his dark, glaring visage, and then went on through the doors into a stately reception hall. A row of tall windows lining one wall of the room was trimmed with wheat-colored drapes. Near their tasseled edges, the curtains sparkled in the lamplight as if they might be embellished with gold thread. Late summer rain spattered against tightly shut glass panes that revealed only darkness outside, but reflected the activity inside. The pale wool carpets, graced with flowers painstakingly sculpted in relief by means of different length yarn, were tracked with mud. Scouts came and went, along with messengers and soldiers giving their reports to some of the officers. Other officers barked orders. Soldiers carrying rolled maps followed a few of the higher-ranking men as they meandered around the stuffy room. One of the maps lay unrolled across a narrow table. The table's silver candelabrum had been set aside on the floor behind the table. As Nikki passed the table, she glanced down and saw that it was missing many of the elements so carefully marked on the map drawn by the Daharan messenger. On the map laid out over the narrow table, there was nothing but dark splotches from spilled ale in the area to the northwest. In the map etched in Nikki's mind, there were the mountains, rivers, high passes, and streams, and a dot marking the place where Richard was, along with his mother confessor bride and the Mord Sith. Officers talked among themselves, some standing about, some half-sitting on iron-legged, marble-topped tables, some lounging in padded leather chairs as they took delicacies from silver trays borne on the trembling hands of sweating servants. Others swilled ale from tall pewter mugs, and yet others drank wine from dainty glasses, all acting as if they were intimate with such splendor, and all of them looking as out of place as toads at tea. An older woman, Sister Lydmilla, apparently trying to be unobtrusive by cowering in the shadows beside the drapes, snapped upright when she saw Nikki marching across the room. Sister Lydmilla stepped out of the shadows, briefly pausing to smooth her dingy skirts, an act that could not possibly produce any noticeable improvement. Sister Lydmilla once had told Nikki, "The things learned in youth never left you, and were often much easier to recall than yesterday's dinner." Rumor had it that the old sister, skilled in arcane spells known to only the most powerful sorceresses, had many interesting things from her youth to recall. Sister Lydmilla's leathery skin was stretched so tight over the bones of her skull that she reminded Nikki of nothing so much as an exhumed corpse. As cadaverous-looking as the aged sister was, she advanced across the room in quick, sharp movements. When she was only 10 feet away, Sister Lydmilla waved an arm as if not sure Nikki would see her.
"Sister Nikki! Sister Nikki, there you are!"
She seized Nikki's wrist.
"Come along, dear, come along. His Excellency is waiting for you. This way, come along."
Nikki clasped the sister's tugging hand. "Lead the way, Sister Lydmilla. I'm right behind you." The older woman smiled over her shoulder. It wasn't a pleasant or joyous smile, but one of relief. Jagang punished anyone who displeased him, regardless of their culpability.
"What took you so long, Sister Nikki? His Excellency is in quite a state, he is, because of you. Where have you been?"
"I had business I had to attend to." The woman had to take 2 or 3 steps for every one of Nikki's.
"Business, indeed. Were it up to me, I'd have you down in the kitchen scrubbing pots for being off on a lark when you're wanted."
Sister Lydmilla was frail and forgetful, and she sometimes failed to realize she was no longer at the palace of the prophets. Jagang used her to fetch people or to wait for them and show them the way, usually to his tents. Should she forget the way, he could always correct her route if need be. It amused him to use a venerable sister of the light, a sorceress reputedly possessing knowledge of the most esoteric incantations, as nothing more than an errand girl. Away from the palace and its spell that slowed aging, Sister Lydmilla was in a sudden headlong rush toward the grave. All the sisters were. The round-backed sister, her dangling arm swinging, shuffled along in front of Nikki, pulling her by her hand, leading her through grand rooms, up stairways and down hallways. At a doorway framed in gold-leafed moldings, she finally paused, touching her fingers to her lower lip as she caught her breath. Sober soldiers prowling the hall painted Nikki with glares as dark as her dress. She recognized the men as Imperial Guards.
"Here it is,"
Sister Lydmilla peered up at Nikki.
"His Excellency is in his rooms. Hurry, then. Go on. Go on now."
She swirled her hands as if she were trying to herd livestock.
"In you go."
Before entering, Nikki took her hand from the lever and turned back to the old woman.
"Sister Lydmilla, you once told me that you thought I would be the one best suited for some of the knowledge you had to pass on." Sister Lydmilla's face brightened with a sly smile. "Ah, some of the more occult magic interests you at long last, Sister Nikki."
Nikki had never before been interested in what Sister Lydmilla had occasionally pestered her to learn. Magic was a selfish pursuit. Nikki learned what she had to, but never went out of her way to go beyond, to the more unusual spells.
"Yes, as a matter of fact, I believe I am at last ready." "I always told the prelate that you were the only one at the palace with the power for the conjuring I know."
The woman leaned close.
"Dangerous conjuring it is, too."
"It should be passed on while you are able." Sister Lydmilla nodded with satisfaction.
"I believe you are old enough. I could show you."
"When?"
"I will come see you tomorrow."
Nikki glanced toward the door. "I don't believe I will be able to take a lesson tonight."
"Tomorrow, then. If I do come around to see you, I will be most eager to learn. I especially wish to know about the maternity spell."
From what Nikki knew of it, The oddly named maternity spell might be just what she needed. It had the further advantage that once invoked, it was inviolate. Sister Lydmilla straightened and again touched her fingers to her lower lip. A look of concern crossed her face.
My, my, that one, is it? Well, yes, I could teach you. You have the ability. Few do. I trust none but you to be able to bring such a thing to life. It requires tremendous power of the gift. You have that. As long as you understand and are willing to accept the cost involved, I can teach you.
Nikki nodded. I will come when I can, then. The old sister ambled on down the hall, deep in thought, already thinking about the lesson. Nikki didn't know if she would live to take the lesson. After she had watched the old sister vanish around the corner, Nikki entered a quiet room lit by myriad candles and lamps. The high ceiling was edged with a painted leaf and acorn design. Plush couches and chairs upholstered in muted browns were set about on thick carpets of rich yellows, oranges, and reds, making them look like a forest floor in the autumn. Heavy drapes had been pulled closed across an expanse of windows. Two sisters sitting on a couch leaped to their feet.
"Sister Nikki!"
one virtually shouted in relief. The other ran to the double doors at the other side of the room and opened one without knocking, apparently by instruction. She stuck her head into the room beyond to speak in a low voice Nikki couldn't hear. The sister leaped back when Jigang in the inner room roared,
"Get out! All of you! Everyone else out!"
Two more young sisters, no doubt personal attendants to the Emperor, burst out of the room. Nikki had to step out of the way as all four gifted women made for the doorway leading out of the apartment. A young man Nikki hadn't noticed in the corner joined the women. None even glanced in Nikki's direction as they rushed to do as they were ordered. The first lesson you learned as a slave to Jigang was that when he told you to do something, he meant you to do it right now. Little provoked him more than delay. At the door to the inner room, a woman Nikki didn't recognize ran out, following close on the heels of the others. She was young and beautiful, with dark hair and eyes, probably a captive picked up somewhere along the long march, and no doubt used for Jigang's amusement. Her eyes reflected a world gone mad for her. Such were the unavoidable costs if the world was to be brought to a state of order. Great leaders, by their very nature, came with shortcomings in character, which they themselves viewed as mere peccadilloes. The far-ranging benefits Jigang would bring to the poor, suffering masses of humanity far outweighed his crass acts of personal gratification and the relatively petty havoc he wrought. Nikki was often the object of his transgressions. It was a price worth paying for the help that would eventually accrue to the helpless. That was the only matter that could be considered. The outer door closed, and the apartment was finally empty of everyone but Nikki and the Emperor. She stood erect, head held high, arms at her sides, relishing the quiet of the place. The splendor meant little to her, but quiet was a luxury she had come to appreciate, even if it was selfish. In the tents there was always the noise of the army pressed close around. Here it was quiet. She glanced around the spacious and elaborately decorated outer room, contemplating the idea that Jigang would have acquired the taste for such places. Perhaps he, too, simply wanted quiet. She turned back to the inner room. He was just inside, waiting, watching her, a muscled mass of fury coiled in rage. She strode directly up to him. "You wish to see me, Excellency?" Nikki felt a stunning pain as the back of his beefy hand whipped across her face. The blow spun her around. Her knees hit the floor. He yanked her to her feet by her hair. The second time, she clouted the wall before crashing to the floor again. Stupefying pain throbbed through her face. When she had her bearings, she got her legs under her and stood before him again. The third time, she took a freestanding candelabrum down with her. Candles tumbled and rolled across the floor. A long wisp of sheer curtain she had snatched as she grabbed for support ripped away and drifted down over her as she and an upturned table slammed to the floor. Glass shattered. Metal clattered as small items bounded away. She was dizzy and stunned, her vision faltering. Her eyes felt as if they might have burst, her jaw as if it had been shattered, her neck as if the muscles had ripped. Nikki lay sprawled on the floor, savoring the strident waves of pain, wallowing in the rare sensation of feeling. She saw blood splattered across the light fringe of the carpet beneath her, and across the warm glow of wooden flooring. She heard Jagang yelling something at her, but she couldn't make out the words over the ringing in her ears. With a shaky arm, she pushed herself up onto her hip. Blood warmed her fingers when she touched them to her mouth. She relished the hurt. It had been so long since she had felt anything except for that too brief moment with the moored Sith. This was a glorious wash of agony. Jagang's brutality was able to reach down into the abyss not only because of the cruelty itself, but because she knew she need not suffer it. He too knew that she was there by her choice, not his. That only intensified his anger and thus her sensations. His rage seemed lethal. She merely noted the fact that she very probably wouldn't leave the room alive. She would probably not get to learn Sister Lidmilla's spells. Nikki simply waited to discover what fate had already decided for her. The room's spinning finally slowed enough for her to once more make it to her feet. She pulled herself up straight before the silent, brawny form of Emperor Jagang. His shaved head reflected points of light from some of the lamps. His only facial hair was a 2-inch braid of mustache growing above each corner of his mouth, and another in the center under his lower lip. The gold ring through his left nostril and its thin gold chain running to another ring in his left ear glimmered in the mellow lamplight. Except for a heavy ring on each finger, he was without the plundered assortment of royal chains and jewels he usually wore around his neck. The rings glistened with her blood. He was bare-chested, but unlike his head, his chest was covered in coarse hair. His muscles bulged, their tendons standing out as he flexed his fists. He had the neck of a bull, and his temperament was worse. Nikki, half a head shy of his height, stood before him, waiting, looking into the eyes she used to see in her nightmares. They were a murky gray, without whites, and clouded over with sullen, dusky shapes that stole across a surface of inky obscurity. Even though they had no evident iris and pupil, nothing but seeming dark voids where a normal person had eyes, she never had any doubt whatsoever as to when he was looking at her. They were the eyes of a dreamwalker. A dreamwalker denied access to her mind. Now she understood why.
"Well," he growled.
He threw up his hands.
"Cry, yell, scream, beg, argue, make excuses. Don't just stand there."
Nikki swallowed back the sharp taste of blood as she gazed placidly into his scarlet glare.
"Please be specific, Excellency, as to which one you would prefer, how long I should carry on, and if I should end it of my own accord, or wait for you to beat me into unconsciousness."
He lunged at her with a howl of fury. He seized her throat in his massive fist to hold her as he struck her. Her knees buckled, but he held her up until she was able to steady herself. He released her throat with a shove.
"I want to know why you did that to Kadar."
She offered only a bloody smile to his anger. He wrenched her arm behind her back and pulled her hard against him.
"Why would you do such a thing? Why?"
The deadly dance with Jagang had begun. She dimly wondered again if this time she would lose her life. Jagang had killed a number of the sisters who had displeased him. Nikki's safety with him, such as it was, lay in her very indifference to her safety. Her utter disinterest in her own life fascinated Jagang because he knew it was sincere.
"Sometimes you're a fool," she said with true contempt, "too arrogant to see what is in front of your nose."
He twisted her arm until she thought it surely would snap. His panting breath was warm on her throbbing cheek.
"I have killed people for sake much less than that."
She mocked him through the pain.
"Do you intend to bore me to death, then? If you want to kill me, seize me by the throat and strangle me, or slash me to a bloody mess so that I will bleed to death at your feet. Don't think you can suffocate me with the sheer weight of your monotonous threats. If you wish to kill me, then be a man and do so, or else shut your mouth."
The mistake most people made with Jagang was to believe, because of his capacity for such profound brutality, that he was an ignorant, dumb brute. He was not. He was one of the most intelligent men Nikki had ever met. Brutality was but his cloak. As an outgrowth of his access to the thoughts of so many different people's minds, he was directly exposed to their knowledge, wisdom, and ideas. Such exposure augmented his intellect. He also knew what people most feared.
If anything about him frightened her, it was not his brutality, but his intelligence, for she knew that intelligence could be a bottomless well of truly inventive cruelty.
"Why did you kill him, Nikki?"
he asked again, his voice losing some of its fire. In her mind, like a protective stone wall, was the thought of Richard. He had to see it in her eyes. Part of Jigang's rage, she knew, was at his own impotence in penetrating her mind, of possessing her as he could so many others. Her knowing smirk taunted him with what he could not have. "It amused me to hear the great Kadar Khadif cry for mercy and then to deny it." Jigang roared again, a beastly sound out of place for such a mannerly bedchamber. She saw the blur of his arms swinging for her. The room whirled violently around her. She expected to hit something with a bone-breaking impact. Instead, she upended and crashed onto unexpected softness. The bed, she realized. Somehow she had missed the marble and mahogany posts at the corners. They surely would have killed her. Fate, it seemed, was trifling with her. Jigang landed atop her. She thought he might beat her to death now. Instead, he studied her eyes from inches away. He sat up, straddling her hips. His meaty hands pulled at the laces on the bodice of her dress. With a quick yank of the material, he exposed her breasts. His fingers squeezed her bared flesh until her eyes watered. Nikki didn't watch him or resist, but instead went limp as he pushed her dress up around her waist. Her mind began its journey away to where only she alone could go. He fell on her, driving the wind from her lungs in a helpless grunt. Arms lying at her sides, her fingers open and slack, eyes unblinking, Nikki stared at the folds of the silk in the canopy of the bed, her mind unaffected in the distant quiet place. The pain seemed remote. Her struggle to breathe seemed trivial. As he went about his coarse business, she focused her thoughts instead on what she was going to do. She had never believed possible what she now contemplated. Now she knew it was. She had only to decide to do it. Jigang slapped her, causing her to focus her mind back on him.
"You're too stupid to even weep."
She realized he had finished. He was not happy that she hadn't noticed. She had to make an effort not to comfort her jaw, stinging from what to him was a smack, but to the person receiving it was a blow nearly strong enough to cripple. Sweat dripped from his chin onto her face. His powerful body glistened from the exertion she had not perceived. His chest heaved as he glared down at her. Anger, of course, powered the glare, but Nikki thought she saw a tinge of something else there, too, regret, or maybe anguish, or maybe even hurt.
"Is that what you wish me to do, then, Excellency? Weep?"
His voice turned bitter as he flopped onto his side beside her.
"No. I wish you to react."
"But I am," she said, as she stared up at the canopy. "It is simply not the reaction you wish."
He sat up.
"What's the matter with you, woman?"
She gazed up at him a moment, and then turned her eyes away.
"I have no idea," she answered honestly. "But I think I must find out."
Chapter 14. Jigang gestured.
"Take off your clothes. You're spending the night. It's been too long."
This time it was he who stared off at the walls.
"I've missed you in my bed, Nikki."
She didn't answer. She did not believe that in his bed he missed anything. She didn't believe she could conceive of him understanding what it was to miss a person. What he missed, she thought, was being able to miss someone. Nikki sat up and threw her legs over the side of the bed as she untangled herself from the black dress. She pulled it off over her head and then laid it out across the back of a padded leather chair. She reclaimed her underthings from the tangles of the bed covering and tossed them on the chair before drawing off her stockings and placing them, too, on the seat of the chair. He watched her body the whole time, watched her as she tended to her dress, smoothing it to straighten what he had done to it, watched the mysterious allure of a woman acting a woman. When she had finished, she turned back to him. She stood proudly to let him see that which he could have only by force and never as a willing gift. She could detect the sense of privation in his expression. This was the only victory she could have.
the more he took her by force, the more he understood that that was the only way he could ever have her, and the more it maddened him. She would just as soon die, as willingly give him the satisfaction of that gift, and he knew the brutal truth of that. He finally forced himself away from his private bitter longing and looked up into her eyes.
"Why do you kill Kadar?"
She sat on the edge of the bed opposite him, just out of his easy reach, but within range of his lunge, and shrugged her bare shoulders.
"You are not the Order. The Order is no single man, but an ideal of equity. As such, it will survive any one person. You serve that ideal and the Order, for now, in the capacity of but a brute. The Order could use any brute to serve its purpose. You, Kadar, or another. I simply eliminated someone who might one day have been a threat to you before you can rise above your present role."
He grinned.
"You expect me to believe that you were doing me a kindness? Now you mock me."
"If it pleases you to think so, then do."
Her smooth white limbs were a vivid contrast to the heavy, dark, variegated, verdant bed cover and sheets. He lay back atop them against several rumpled pillows immodestly displayed before her. His eyes looked even darker than usual.
"What's all this talk I keep hearing about Jagang the Just?"
"Your new title. It is the thing that will save you, the thing that will win for you, the thing that will bring you more glory than anything else. Yet in return for eliminating a future threat to your standing and for making you a hero to the people, you draw my blood."
He put an arm behind his head.
"Sometimes you make me believe the stories that people tell, that you really are crazy."
"And if you kill everyone?"
"Then they will be dead."
"I have recently been through towns visited by your soldiers. It seems they didn't harm the people. At least they didn't slaughter everyone in sight, as they did when they began their march into the new world."
He lunged and seized a fistful of her hair. With a snarl, he yanked her onto her back beside him. She caught her breath as he rose up on an elbow and directed his disturbing gaze down into her eyes.
"It is your job to make examples of people, to show them that they must contribute to our cause, to make them fear the Imperial Order's righteous wrath. That is the task I assigned you."
"Is that so? Then why did the soldiers not make examples too? Why did they let those towns be? Why did they not contribute to striking fear into the hearts of the people? Why didn't they lay waste to every city and town in their path?"
"And then who would I rule but my soldiers? Who would do the work? Who would make things? Who would grow the food? Who would pay tribute? To whom will I bring the hope of the Order? Who will be there to glorify the great Emperor Jagang if I kill them all?"
He flopped onto his back.
"You may be called Death's Mistress, but we can't have it your way and kill everyone. In this world you are bound to the Order's purpose. If people feel the Order's arrival can mean nothing but their death, they will resist to the end. They must know that it is only their resistance which will bring a swift and sure death. If they realize our arrival offers them a moral life, a life which puts man under the Creator and the welfare of man above all else, they will embrace us."
"You dealt death to this city," she taunted,
forcing him to unwittingly prove the validity of what she had done,
"even though they chose the Order."
"I've given orders that any people of the city still alive be allowed to go back to their homes. The rampage is ended. The people here betrayed their promises and thus invited brutality. They saw it, but now that is finished, and a new day of order has come. The old ideas of separate lands are over, as it was ended in the old world. All people would be governed together and would enter a new age of prosperity together under the Imperial Order. Only those who resist will be crushed, not because they resist, but because ultimately They are traitors to the well-being of their fellow man and must be eliminated. Here in Andorith was the turning point in our struggle. Richard Rahl was at last cast out by the people themselves who came to see the virtue of what we offer. No longer can he claim to represent them. Yet you came in and slaughtered? The leaders here betrayed certain promises to me. Who knows how much of the general population may have collaborated in that, and so the people had to pay a price. But collectively, they have also earned a place in the Order for their courage in emphatically rejecting Lord Rahl and the outdated, selfish, uninspired morals he offered them. The tide has turned. People no longer have faith in Lord Rahl, nor can he now have any faith in them. Richard Rahl is a fallen leader.
Nikki smiled inwardly, a sad smile. She was a fallen woman, and Richard was a fallen man. Their fate was sealed.
"Perhaps here, in this one small place," she said. "But he is far from defeated. He is still dangerous. After all, you failed to gain everything you sought here at Andorith because of Richard Rahl. He not only denied you a clear victory by destroying vast stores of supplies and leaving the systems and services of production in total disarray, but he also slipped right through your fingers when you should have captured him."
"I will have him."
"Really? I wonder."
She watched his fist and waited until it relaxed before she continued. "When will you move our forces north into the Midlands?" Jagang stroked his hand down his woolly chest.
"Soon. I want to give them time to become careless first. When they grow complacent, I will strike north."